You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back. Kevin A.C. posting a breaking news story out there at San Diego Union Tribune. He'll be with us in approximately 15 minutes. Did you ask him that, Gibbs?
He couldn't talk. He was really, he was focused.
Could they be trading out of three? Which makes him being our guest even more intriguing.
I don't think so.
Okay.
He didn't sound like it was breaking, but he had to. There was something that had developed that he had to get out.
Mike Mayock, by the way, we'll see what Kevin A.C. says about this, believes that the Chargers are going to take Jalen Ramsey at number three.
Tunsil's free fall starting now. He's not going to Dallas.
I'm happy to take
He's not going to Jacksonville. He could end up at Baltimore.
Okay, he can be in Baltimore.
That would be such an Ozzie Newsome pick.
Tunsil still on the board, he could also go to Frisco very easily.
Yeah.
But isn't Anthony Davis, did he apply for reinstatement
this
year?
They said that that's not true.
That it's not true?
That he hasn't filed. He said that, but he tweeted it, but the paperwork hasn't been filed.
Okay.
Because that's a game changer. You know.
Is he that good?
He was that good. Yeah. Okay. I'm not saying
starting
Pro Bowl,
left
but a very, very, very good starting. Oh, well, actually starting right tackle because they've got Staley.
Oh, right.
At left
right.
tackle. So.
Let's go back to the phones now. Our good friend Chevy from New Jersey. It's been a while. Chevy.
Hey, guys. Thanks a lot.
What's up, bro?
First of all, I'd like to say that Prince was the man. If you've ever walked into a club with a couple dudes from Southside Chicago and Gary, and you're the only white dude in there, and they start playing Prince and the place goes crazy, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
All right, let's get back to football. Okay, my pick for number eight is Jack Conklin. He's got that gene you're talking about, that alpha male. And if he's not available, I also like DeForest Buckner. Same thing, alpha male. And then I'd like to say RG3 was mistreated at Washington. He was never trained properly. They threw him in the playoff game. He was injured. His knee was all screwed up. They almost ruined that guy's career. Come on.
I think that's true, but I will say I think RG3 was responsible for a lot of the things that happened in Washington as well, and the key will be
he's immature.
He learned from it. And I think when he, you know, it's I can't walk those shoes. You are the closest one to any of us that could. And you shared an interesting story with me off the air, and you'll share it if you want to on the air. But it has got to be difficult. And at the end of the day, these are young men going from being the Heisman Trophy winner to coming in the NFL and all of a sudden being like, man, this is easy. He threw 20 touchdowns with only 5 interceptions, ran for like 800 yards, was a highlight film every day. Everybody's saying this guy's changing the league. And then all of a sudden, you go out there and you maybe don't understand what it truly takes, that it is a lifestyle to be a pro. And
correct.
I know for you it was different, you know, but you did come off a national championship team.
All-American.
And you said at one point you had to look yourself in the mirror in San Diego and say, if I keep acting this way and not treating this as my life and my business,
right,
I won't be doing it
anymore. I've got one more year in the league.
And when was that?
That was for me going into year three. So okay. I spent 2 years just
surviving.
You know, rookie year was a wash because I went from 14-0 to 4-12.
Yeah, right.
So the team was abysmal, but then we went to 12-4. Was when I was kind of like, hey, everybody's starting to notice who I am, and I'm actually taking advantage of it in a city, or in a state rather, you know, not Ohio, out there in California. But I really did. It was just, and it wasn't like I was doing anything that would get me arrested. It was just lackadaisical. Football wasn't my priority. It was more about, you know, the scene and the people, having a good time, enjoying California for what it can offer, along with playing football. And I had the epiphany at one point to go, if I continue down this path, I'm going to play one more year and I'm going to be a statistic. And now I have become a statistic because I've almost tripled the average, you know, of your career in the National Football League. Even more so, the one story that I share a lot about is on a different stage, but in similar circumstances, is Maurice Clarett. You know, Maurice Clarett was, you know, came from a single family, you know, raised by his mother in Youngstown, or, you know, obviously went to Warren Harding, goes to Ohio State, has the freshman season that he has, and you have a city in Columbus and a fan base, which is worldwide, offering you the world on a silver platter. And a kid who was raised with nothing has everything, you know, in the other hand, you know, in both of the hands now being offered in front of him. And it's just that was the choice that he had time and time again. How do I not just take off that silver platter? You're going to give me a car to drive for free? How many times can you say no before you say, just give me the keys? You know, and that's what he was under as a college athlete. So you can only imagine what the money being drafted number two, the fame, the Adidas, everything that came with, and even more so, a passionate fan base that has been, you know, behind the Dallas or have always been behind the Dallas Cowboys for the most part in that division, in a frenzy and a tizzy over you that A, my team got it right in drafting you, and you immediately paid off for us and sent us to the playoffs. You're a god in and around the Washington, D.C. area.
God. And that fan base.
So imagine what was, you know, the distractions that were at hand and the thoughts running through a grounded individual, RG3's mind.
Yeah. I think it's hard. I really do think it's hard. I think it's hard to comprehend even what, you know, our former quarterback is going through. I don't think anybody – the guy was like a beetle.
Who, Brandon Whedon?
Yeah, yeah. Oh. You know, guy was like a beetle. And I think it's got to be some culture shock. I do believe – that, you know, RG3 has been humbled. And that's why, for me, Carson Wentz could very well turn out to be a great quarterback in the NFL.
He could also very well stink.
Yes, he could. He
and
could.
Would you rather have your chance to go 0-1? Or are odds better for you to go 0-1 or 0-4?
I'll say this. RG3 should not have changed the decision, but it's easier for me to understand, looking at him as the swing at the plate at the quarterback position this year, to say, all right, we don't need to force it.
How much time,
if we don't believe it?
How much time at this point in the offseason has Hugh been able to spend with RG3?
I mean, on the field, he is in his hip pocket.
I would say when the players are in the building, I would say including practice, which is 2 hours, three and a half to 4 hours a day.
And since they signed him?
Since the workouts have started, so which is 2 weeks.
But he's also been spending, as RG3 finally brought to light yesterday, there
time
were rumors about
him,
a lot of time, it sounds like, with Tom House.
Right, but I'm just talking about maybe in the last 2 weeks, Hugh has gotten much more comfortable with RG3 and went to Sashi and said, you know what, I'd like to give this guy a chance to see if he can make it. And the obvious way to do it is not to bring in a rookie quarterback with the second pick.
I also know he's been in here on his days off. He has days off, but he's in here. He's working.
Are they allowed to talk to the coaches then, or it's against the CBA?
That I do not know.
Yeah, you can. It's not NCAA.
Yeah, but I know he's doing whatever he can to be. We'll find out. Again, no idea if it's going to work, but he's putting his best foot forward, and you've got a talented group around him. That's why it is imperative to me that we get him playmakers.
At least two receivers.
I want three coming out of this draft.
Maybe four.
I'm not afraid. Not afraid at all. All right, when we come back, Kevin AC from the San Diego Union-Tribune will be with us on CBD.
Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. It is my pleasure to bring on a former, I guess a friend and a colleague for our time in San Diego, Kevin Acey of the San Diego Union-Tribune. What's up, Kevin?
Matt. This is so great. How you doing, man?
Cannot complain. You know, living the dream here in this dreary spring in Cleveland.
There's no such thing as a dreary day in Cleveland. I know that.
That's right. Well, Kevin, of course, a lot of the intrigue that I had in wanting to reach out to you to bring you on and talk is, of course, you know, the number three pick. Even before the Cleveland Browns traded out of number two, but now that we have, it's very interesting because we sit – just five picks behind you. Just give us a brief synopsis of what direction in being around the team as much as you probably have this offseason thus far, are they going to go at number three?
Well, I think that there's a little bit of disappointment that they were even sort of taken out of the running, really, for any sort of trades. I mean, the trade market certainly, if there is one, would have changed in that people generally don't trade up too far to take anything but a quarterback there at number three. So I really do believe, and they believe, that they'll be executing the number three pick.
When you look at that number three pick, we've heard the name Jalen Ramsey, obviously with the departure of Eric Weddle, but you got Phillip Rivers there. The window with him, you know, closes every year. They need help on that offensive line. Laremy Tunsil seems to make a lot of sense. Who do you think will actually be the pick on Thursday?
You know, the more that I hear, and here's how it goes from my perspective. There's certainly not anybody letting me in on their draft board, but you talk to other people around the league, and then you talk to people in the organization, and you try to read between the lines of what they're saying about certain people. And I'm starting to sway toward DeForest Buckner.
Really?
And it's interesting, you know, me having watched this team for a long time, ever since Sean Merriman's body started breaking down, this team has not had a disruptive force that could really, I mean, could change games based on what he did that day. There have been a couple guys, hey, who have done valiant jobs on the defense, but we're talking about someone on that front seven who can wreck things. And so I started out this offseason saying, well, that's it. We're talking Bosa. We're talking Buckner. Then, knowing the Chargers really liked Jalen Ramsey, and then me hearing from other people, because I try not to play. I mean, I play coach and scout and all that, but, and general manager, but I'm not one, okay? And so, but man, I fell in love with Jalen Ramsey, and Eric Weddle's gone, and if you've got this transcendent-type player in Ramsey, then him. But as far as, like I said, I don't know if even me saying I'm being led to believe DeForest Buckner, that might be a little strong, but I'm just, you know, I've been okay in past years of saying, you know what, in reading between the lines here, I'm thinking this is what they're going to do. Your Tunsil observation, sure, there's no bigger Phillip Rivers proponent on the planet. Well, maybe his wife, one of his eight kids, his parents, but after that, I'm like, that's fine, okay? And the window, and you're entirely accurate about everything you're saying. However, when you're drafting, and I understand, you go for best available there at number three. And this Tunsil kid is the kind of can't miss, evidently, right? But they are set on their offensive line. Weird thing to say about an offensive line that performs so badly, but you know their starting offensive line last year, what was going to be the team that that played the opening game, they played 74 snaps together last year.
Yeah, you remember when the Browns came to town, you right. Literally signed people off the street that week who started against the Browns.
Yeah, so it's like you can't really say, no, I'm not saying, and the Chargers aren't saying, that this is a fantastic offensive line that couldn't use Laremy Tunsil. Thing is, you've committed big dollars to King Dunlap. Yep. At left tackle, you've committed. Yep. You just signed Joe Barksdale at right tackle. Well, wait a minute, is one of those going to become a swing tackle? Because are you picking the number three guy who's supposed to be this incredible stud and not starting him? So now you're paying three guys to be left tackle. I'm not saying it's impossible. This is not what I'm hearing. It certainly doesn't make sense to me.
Kevin, I, of course, stay in tune, yourself being one of them, with many people out there connected with not only the city of San Diego, but the San Diego Chargers in particular. And John Pagano is one of those guys. When we made the move, the Cleveland Browns, that being, from 2 to 8, the same reason I wanted to get you on this show, I started texting John to try to get some insight, who, of course, is the defensive coordinator for the San Diego Chargers, as some Browns fans may not know. And I just start throwing out names at him, and Ramsey, Tunsil, and Bosa is the one that, as I threw names at him and kind of give him my analyzation, Bosa's the one guy that he came back with and was like, hey, do you like or do you love Joey Bosa? So as you evaluate those guys, do you fit? And because we run a 3-4 defense here in Cleveland, do you think that Joey Bosa and his skill set fits the 3-4 defense? And if so, is his hand going to be on the ground consistently, or is he going to be, as an outside linebacker, wrecking the way that Sean Merriman did?
Well, this is one of those teams that was in either your nickel or your dime like 70% of the time last year, and that's been pretty consistent. And you played under John, though, before he became a coordinator, but he certainly picked up some things. And look, as they have you were fortunate enough, Matt, to play behind Jamal Williams. Well, so you know that once they lost him,
gotta
that changes
the
defense. Yep. Okay, so they haven't had that luxury of the Wade Phillips, you know, 3-4, right? And they play so much different stuff that Joey Bosa, with the way that he gets off the ball, absolutely. And that's who I was in love with. But then again, this is all based on No one's telling me what their draft board is, okay? But this is just based on what I'm reading. I sort of think, okay, no, not Bosa. All right, Buckner, Ramsey. And they played, I couldn't give you the percentage, but the number of times they had four guys on the front, two guys on the front, three guys. I mean, it's amazing how this 3-4, how often it looks like a 4-3.
Kevin, do you think this year, and just kind of transition off the draft for a second, when you look at this Chargers team, obviously last year you get Melvin Gordon, the expectation sky high. He had a very rough rookie year, and some of it I'm sure was his adjustment. Some of it was the offensive line play ahead of him. What are the expectations with Melvin Gordon now in year number two?
That he would be better, which is a lot like, I don't know. It's not very difficult.
Sure.
He showed some things at the beginning of last year that you have zero question that this guy can be a force in this league. He did. His legs keep going. He is smart, I would say. He can outrun guys. He can run over guys. He doesn't go down from the first hit. I mean, again, not a scout, not a coach, but that's what I'm saying is even a dummy like me said, this kid's got it, okay? Now, their offensive line was in shambles. He was a rookie. He lost confidence. It was apparent 6-7 games into the season, Melvin Gordon wasn't going to be okay in his rookie year. It was done. And I based that on, and that knows, I worked the locker room a lot. His teammates knew it. Everyone on that team knew 2015 was a lost cause for Melvin Gordon. His head it just became where there just weren't the lanes. Certainly not he was used to at Wisconsin, which every running back making the jump has to get used to. But he just was kind of out there. Now, I think that his mentality and his talent is such that he's going to be able to rebound this year. Certainly is important because as much as I love Phillip, he's at his best when he's got a really good running back.
Kevin, last one for me is how much pressure is there on Tom Telesco and McCoy to make these picks? Because just as I was drafted to the Chargers in 03 to a 4-12 football team, we changed that around to 12-4, and of course went on an amazing run. And it seems that division around the San Diego Chargers has gotten a heck of a lot better with the Broncos winning the Super Bowl. You've got the Raiders with a good core of players in Khalil Mack, Amari Cooper, and of course they've got the quarterback right in Derek Carr, and the Chiefs with Andy Reid. Is this going to be a draft that you look back that Telesco and McCoy can really have to hitch their wagon to and hit? Otherwise, they're going to be out of a job very shortly.
Matt, you hit right on what I think is is an underestimated facet of the Chargers' decline. Now, I'm not taking anything away from the teams you were on. You were on a couple of the best Chargers teams of all time. Were. But the AFC was horrible. AFC West was horrible. It was, for many years, it was you guys and the Broncos. The Broncos had some down years. The Raiders, remember? The Chargers won 13 in a row.
Yeah, I was a part of it.
Division rival. The Chargers were really good, but the AFC West was terrible. That's not the case anymore. Heck, I've been waiting for so long for this to happen and been thinking it was going to happen, and I'm afraid to say it, but the Raiders are on the rise, man. The Chiefs, they're built to beat the Chargers, or maybe the Chargers just aren't built to beat the Chiefs. It's just they're running to a rough patch against them with that defense. And the Broncos, are the Broncos. And the pass rush in this division, holy smoke.
Off the charts.
So that's to me. Look, I can't really tell you. This team is not as talented. Now, the teams you were on, Matt, got pegged by people as the most talented teams in the NFL. I don't know that that was true. And this team is, no one would confuse that. But I don't know how much worse these Chargers are than, say, the 08 team, the 05 team, the 04 team. It's just they're having to, where you guys were going 5-1, 6-0 in the division, this team is struggling, man.
Yep.
Kevin, wrapping it up here, we'll talk about a Brown who's now a Charger, Travis Benjamin. Have you got an opportunity to talk with him at all and kind of your early impressions or what you're hearing about Travis coming there to the Chargers?
A funny thing is I'm meeting up with him later today just to get to know him and stuff. I have not met him. I look forward to it very much.
Great kid.
I've heard that. See, I have some people that I know around the Browns that knew him over those years, and they said that's what they said, and that made me feel good. Because you know what, I like to we write all this stuff, and I like to not be burned. And so, you know, I like to hear that he's just a quality individual.
Absolutely.
And so, look, what they need is a returner, and they need some speed. Now, they didn't replace Malcolm Floyd because Malcolm Floyd is 6'5",
correct,
with hands the size of a Prius. But what they did is a guy who can run away from people. So that, you know, that'd be interesting. Their deep threat is not the typical deep threat, I think, is what I'm envisioning here and what Philip Rivers is envisioning from Travis Benjamin. But to be able to spread their offense that way, they're really excited about that. But also the speed element in the return game. This return game has been atrocious for, gosh, the better part of the past 6 years.
All right, Kevin. So DeForest Buckner is your lean right now for the San Diego Chargers at number 3?
That's my lean, but I won't tell you how many times I've been right. Now, of course, the Chargers haven't picked this high since the old man Matt Wilhelm was a Charger. It's been since 2004 since the Chargers picked in the top 10. So usually I'm trying to predict at 18, 25, 27.
Right.
So I should get 3 right, right?
You should. That's right. Since you know that the quarterbacks are gone, it definitely changes. Kevin, definitely appreciate
Thanks, Kevin.
And keep up the great work down there at the Union Tribune.
All right, you guys, take care.
All right, when we come back, Brian Baldinger, Baldy, joins us to talk about the Eagles and the Browns trade, his thoughts on the deal, where the Browns go from here, and what it all means. That's coming up next.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zgura, Matt Wilhelm, the Kid, and Jason Gibbs with you. We go back to the Ohio Business Machines hotline and are very happy to welcome in Brian Baldinger, NFL Network analyst, also the preseason TV analyst for the Philadelphia Eagles games alongside Scott Graham. And, of course, you can follow him on Twitter at BaldyNFL. Welcome to the show, Brian. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, my pleasure, guys. Nice to be with you. Thanks.
All right. So you're close with that Eagles group, obviously, doing the preseason games with them. What was your initial reaction when you saw the trade between the Eagles and the Browns?
Well, I thought it was really good for both teams. The Eagles were really trying to find themselves a franchise quarterback. Whether they gave up too much or not, we'll find out. But I thought the Browns were thrilled. I didn't think the Browns were in love with either one of these quarterbacks at the top. I think they thought that they could find just about the same value and maybe some other guys that are in this draft. And as they try to build this roster, I thought they could use as much ammunition as they could possibly, you know, get. And I thought they got a lot. And so I think it really benefited the Browns, but the Eagles certainly needed somebody to trade with in order to make that happen. So I think both teams got what they wanted, to be honest with you.
Were you a little surprised that they would give up so much for a quarterback given, and I know they can get out of it quickly with Sam Bradford, but also the investment made in Chase Daniel?
Yeah, I mean, but I don't think, when they made those investments to Sam and with, Chase, I don't think they had anything in mind that they would, be able to move it to the position they did to be able to draft one of the quarterbacks. So I think it's, I don't know of any team ever that has committed as much resources as the Eagles have to the quarterback position between guaranteed money and two quarterbacks and what they gave up in order to draft one of the quarterbacks. I mean, it's an awful heavy price to pay, but, they just feel like they haven't been relevant and they haven't had a chance to really win every year since they had Donovan McNabb. And there's just a lot of parallels to 1999 when they drafted Donovan with the second pick and Doug Peterson was here that year, and so I just think they're kind of looking backwards to go forwards.
And, Brian, with the Cowboys getting Romo back, they're, of course, going to be competitive. You've got Washington riding high, winning the division with Kirk Cousins and the franchise tag. Is Philly trying to create a roster to win their division, or is trying to create a roster to just continue to be relevant in the National Football League?
Well, I mean, you try to win your division every year, and, when you – are able to win that, then you're in the dance every year. So that's, you try to win your division. So it's, they did win the division in Chip Kelly's first year in 2013 and really haven't been a factor since. Now, with that, I think they're just trying to build the best roster they possibly can to compete for a championship every year. And they really haven't been able to do that since 2008, the last time they won a playoff game. So, it's been a long drought in Philadelphia. There's been five different head coaches that have come in, or five different starting quarterbacks that have come in since Donovan McNabb was traded to Washington. And so whether they can compete this year or not, that's the ultimate goal, is to win the NFC East and dominate it like they did at one point in the early 2000s.
Talking with NFL Network's Brian Baldinger. Brian, when you look at this Eagles team, and I know that it's before the draft, so the team will take a different shape, although we know Carson Wentz and they don't pick again, obviously, until later in the draft. What is your expectation for where this team finishes? Because to fans of the Cleveland Browns, the Eagles finishing poorly is music to their ears if they can get a higher number one pick next year.
Yeah, well, I understand that, sure. It's hard to say. It really is. I mean, I saw the Washington Redskins last year, week one, against the Miami Dolphins, and they got beat that day by the Dolphins, and they weren't very good at all, and the general manager, Scott McLuhan, didn't think they were very good. And you know, at that time, they didn't know Jay Gruden was going to survive or Kirk Cousins could play 16. They didn't know any of that, and they won the division. So, you know, you got to – you know, every year is a different year. Every coach tries to build a team and build a tough team and try to get on that proverbial roll. The Redskins did last year. They won five in a row at one point late in the season. So that's what it's going to take. Now, whether the Eagles can do that or not, nobody really knows. We know what the schedule looks like. We know that they open up with the Browns, you know, the first week of the season. But outside of that, it's just really hard to predict right now, really, any of these teams' records at this point, especially before the draft.
Sure. Brian, of course, as you mentioned, you know, new head coach there in Philadelphia with the three quarterbacks that you'll potentially have after drafting Carson Wentz at number two. What type of scheme do you expect Doug to run? Is it going to be a little bit more like what we saw out of Andy Reid with the Kansas City Chiefs and Alex Smith? Or is it going to have little facets with Chip Kelly as he left and gone out to San Francisco?
No, I think it's going to look a lot like what Doug Peterson's been around his whole life. You know, the basic West Coast offense with, you know, some vertical attacks to it. But I think you'll see a lot of screens to the running backs, a lot of short passes, you know, and hopefully long runs. You know, high completion percentage from the quarterbacks. And they're going to, you know, run their triangle offenses and really try to find the softness in either the zones or creating openings with the, you know, with man-to-man type of the schemes to get free. I don't expect a whole lot different than what anybody watched in Kansas City over the last 3 years.
And you mentioned running backs, you know, passes to the running backs, long runs. Ryan Matthews, of course, signed last year or a couple years ago out of San Diego, but the departure of DeMarco Murray. Do you expect the Eagles at some point in this draft to address the running back position? And then Matthews going to be the lead guy out of the gates?
I would say Ryan Matthews right now is the lead guy. He's under contract, and when healthy, he was pretty good last year. But I expect them to take a running back in the later rounds. I mean, they don't pick till 79. I'd be surprised if they take a running back there, but I think they'll really kind of follow the board. You know, they got some later picks in this draft in fifth and sixth and seventh rounds. And, you know, I mean, I think that's what Howie Roseman, the general manager, is looking to do right now, try to find, you know, potentially two starters, you know, from pick 79 all the way into the end. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see them take one running back for sure at some point later in this draft.
Brian, for this Eagles team, obviously the big switch on the defensive side of the ball now, Jim Schwartz there. What are your expectations for that team as they transition into this 4-3?
Yeah, well, you know, they were a 4-3, and then under Chip Kelly and Billy Davis Jr., they went to a 3-4, but I never really got the feeling they had the personnel, you know, two true outside linebackers. They didn't really ever have it. So they're the 4-3. That's what Jim Schwartz favors. He doesn't like to blitz a lot. He likes his front four to just to go create a whole lot of havoc. Let his linebackers go clean it up and play his own behind it and keep everything in front of you and, you know, make the teams earn their touchdowns. And I think that's what you're going to see. I think you're going to see a front four led by Fletcher Cox, who was a Pro Bowl player a year ago. He's in his final year of his contract. I expect, you know, Fletcher Cox to kind of set the tone, but they're going to play the run on the way to the quarterback every play. And they're going to get their angles and their twist stumps up front. But it's going to be a front four dominated defense.
But when you saw that the Browns hired Hugh Jackson this offseason, what did you think of that move?
I liked it. I really did. I thought Hugh would play well in Cleveland. He's a tough-minded guy. He's a no-nonsense guy. I've been around him in different places throughout his career. And I always liked his approach. You know, it's just no-nonsense. He's pretty straightforward. You know, and he expects his team to play tough. I expect a strong running game. The play-action pass is off of it. But that's kind of the foundation. Now, I will say this, you know, in Cincinnati the last couple of years, you saw a lot of creativity.
Yep.
You saw a lot of the college game worked in. You saw formations. You saw tackles line up outside the numbers. I mean, you saw a lot of different things from them, and I applaud them because I thought it helped Cincinnati. They had different type of backs, and you know they had really good tight ends, and so they did a lot of things to kind of accent his, you know, the skilled positions that he had, which was plentiful. But you know, one thing that Cincinnati had the whole time he was there, they had a really, really good offensive line, if not the best line in football. And that's kind of where it starts for Hugh. And so I'm sure they will address some of that in this draft. And I would think that, you know, before it's all over, that Cleveland will have a very good offensive line.
And, Brian, last one for me, just to go backwards a little bit to the trade with the Philadelphia Eagles. How has the fan base, which is obviously ever so passionate there in Philadelphia, accepted the trade, you know, losing the assets in favor of one player, potentially Carson Wentz, a quarterback, after making the moves that you've highlighted with Chase Daniel and the payment to Sam Bradford?
I'd say over just a sample over, you know, a day or 2 days now, I would say that they're not really in favor of it. They don't really know Carson Wentz. People didn't watch North Dakota State. They didn't watch Jared Goff. You know, it's not like watching, you know, Cal was on TV a lot. So the fans don't really know. And so their question mark is, why would you mortgage so much to go after a guy that you hope is good? It's not like going after even RG3 a couple of years ago when they traded with the Rams. You know, at least he was a Heisman Trophy winner, and he had a great offense at Baylor, and, you know, he was a Rookie of the Year. I mean, I think the fan base was fine in Washington. And I think if the Eagles were going after a player of that caliber, at least of that moniker, a guy that had that type of national exposure, they'd feel a little bit better about it. But they just feel like this is a project. They've already basically said Sam Bradford's the starter. They don't understand that. If you're going to move up and give up this much to go to number two to get a quarterback, then why isn't he going to start week one? I mean, that's kind of the general sentiment right now in Philadelphia.
Sure, no surprise there, especially as we talked about earlier with Bradford, Chase Daniel there. They got a guy in the second round that's probably, you know, ideally not going to play for him, or second overall, I'm sorry, that's ideally not going to play for them this year. Brian, we appreciate the time, and of course you can follow him on Twitter at BaldyNFL. Thanks for being with us and for the insights today.
All right, my pleasure, guys. Take care.
All right, Brian Baldinger, our guest there on the Ohio Business Machine Hotline when we come back. Final thoughts, maybe even a little Friday forecast with Zagura, Wilhelm, Kuhl.
You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CD. Let's bring in our guy, Jason Gibbs. Gibbs!
Our former guy, you mean?
What?
Someone just wants to stir up some trouble.
He would push us into traffic.
By the way, your pal Uncle Joe Banner says, keep hearing no great quarterbacks the next few years. That's why the trade-ups. Two teams that I talked to have studied this and completely disagree.
What?
Joe Banner's saying he's talked to a couple of NFL front offices that have studied the quarterback classes of the next two drafts, and they think that they are very strong.
Perfect.
Yes. All right, Gibbs, what do you got for us?
Number one.
You aren't getting Jared Goff or Carson Wentz. Give me your next top three QBs available.
I'm going to go Connor Cook, Christian Hackenberg, Paxton Lynch.
In that order?
In that order.
Ugh.
Hackenberg.
And Cook?
Listen, Cook won a lot of games, and how many teams have beaten
him? Yeah, but his teammates don't like him.
How many quarterbacks have beaten your team twice?
How many quarterbacks do you know that enter the huddle and the 10 other guys go, ugh, when he speaks? That's what happened to Michigan State for 3 years. Well, he won a lot of football
games.
Whatever.
All right.
I'm going to go Lynch. I'm going to go, God, I don't like Hackenberg either. I'll go Lynch, Connor Cook, Dak Prescott.
I go Connor Cook, Lynch, and then a tie between Dak Prescott and Cardale Jones.
How can anybody have Connor Cook in their top three?
Connor Cook can play football.
Okay.
Gibbs, what did the Michigan State guy say
about
him?
I don't want him.
Nothing that I can truly repeat on the air, but it had something to do with human excrement.
He eats or he is?
I don't think Dan Marino was well-liked by his teammates. What's your option D? Who do you like?
I don't like Hackenberg. I don't want Connor Cook.
I don't like Hackenberg.
I like Hogan out of Stanford.
He can't throw the ball, though. I mean, I love everything about him, but
I like Paxton.
I feel like we have
I want. I want Paxton one. I'll take the flyer on Cardale if he's not going to see the field this year. Why not?
Yeah, fine.
And then Hogan.
I like Hogan, but Hogan's upside is a career backup.
He's Austin Davis?
No, he's maybe a little bit more physically gifted. What? Connor. Connor was a winner in college.
Connor Shaw?
Yeah. But I just don't. Kevin Hogan can't throw the ball at an NFL level.
I didn't watch much of the combine, but I did see like 30 seconds of it, and I saw that guy try to throw a 60-yard pass.
He couldn't do it.
And not that I think you should be in the fourth preseason game, but you throw a better football than him.
Thank you. Thank you for prefacing that kid.
Thank you, the
number
kid.
Number two.
he really did say you shouldn't be in
that. That made my day. That's okay. There was a compliment there. He struck me down, and then he picked me back up.
That's what the coaches have done all week, by the way, out in Berea. What teams make the next big draft trade? Is there another big trade that you think happens between now and next Thursday?
I think Tennessee's going to.
Tennessee was so – I could see Tennessee, and I don't necessarily know that if Miami's jump from 13 to 8, maybe with the Cleveland Browns, would be considered big or even happen in the next week prior to Thursday. But I think Tennessee – if there's Tennessee has hope that they can get Stanley or Tunsil for Marcus Mariota and get back inside the top 10, it's very likely.
Yeah. Or even Conklin, I think, if two of them go.
But they got to get to 10. At minimum, to get the 3.
That guy, I heard an interview with him, and he just strikes me as a guy that likes to gamble. Like, I'd love to be in a casino with that guy that's Tennessee.
Conklin?
Robinson?
Tennessee's GM.
Came from New England.
I heard an interview with him, and basically it just sounds like this guy likes to take chances, whether it's up, down, or sideways. This guy is a gambler. I think he's trading back in.
There is not another major trade to be made, but I think the Browns will trade again in the first round, and I think it'll be either with the Dolphins or the Titans or the Jets, and it could be both. It could be Browns to the Dolphins at 13, then to 20 with the Jets.
Buckle up.
Number 3.
Where does Josh Norman land?
Washington.
Somebody's going to overpay so much for
him.
Can
you believe they rescinded the franchise tag on him?
I can. I believe it's the same way that that probably one of the best defenders in football, Von Miller, doesn't have a contract yet because the numbers their agents are coming across with is astronomical and makes no economical sense for their football team. So they just, the Carolina Panthers just was like, go ahead, test the market. Go ahead, goodbye. Where does he go? Somebody's going to overpay. Who has a lot of Jacksonville? Yeah, because they're going to pay him a boatload of money, and they got the cap space.
I've heard he's close to a deal with the Washington Redskins.
That's what Kid just said.
15 mil potentially.
Okay.
Number 4.
Final question today, guys. Where does Prince's Super Bowl halftime performance rank all time when it comes to Super Bowl halftime shows?
Number 1. No question about it. He fought through the rain. It was a deluge that day in Miami. He performed.
A deluge. Good word.
He performed way better in the rain than either one of those two quarterbacks did that day. It was
one of them was Rex Grossman.
And the other one was lucky to win a Super Bowl that year, the same way he was lucked into one this year. But it was tremendous. Reading over the set list, I think he did a Jimi Hendrix song. Really, I think there's no question it was the best one ever.
I'm going to say it is second place only to
if you steal Usher right here. Okay, good. All right, you didn't.
And the Black Eyed Peas in Super Bowl 45, the Super Bowl that I played in. So
well,
therefore,
that's got to be your favorite
thank you.
No matter
yes.
what.
Yeah. I heard it down and around the hall at Jerry World.
That's got to be cool.
And the pictures of my kids watching it. So it was really cool from the 15th row.
For me, it really is. I remember the Prince one, and it happens to be phenomenal.
Are you doing Janet Jackson, Justin Timberlake?
Absolutely. That is the one. If you ask me to think of what's the most memorable Super Bowl halftime show of all time, that's it. I know exactly where I was standing. I know exactly who was there.
It's like 9/11.
I
Where were you?
But better.
I didn't even watch that. I didn't even watch that halftime show.
Yeah.
What year was that?
It was the Jake Delhomme.
What year was that?
It was Patriots.
Panthers. 2004?
No, it couldn't have been that long ago. Could it have been? It would have been the last time the Patriots won it. It could have been. 2004? I mean, I was still at my house on Coleridge, the kid. It could have
been. I remember where I was for that Super Bowl. I was at home. I was back here. And I think I was at Elyria Catholic for like a gambling Super Bowl party, I believe.
Okay.
Were you the headliner?
But I watched. Yes, of course. But I didn't watch any of the football game. But I didn't watch any of the game.
I think it was 2004.
That was a good stab.
It would have been the last time the Patriots won the Super Bowl.
Okay.
No, it would not have been the last time. The last time before the last.
Yes, it was 2004. Great. Wilhelm.
It's all in there somewhere,
Wilhelm,
man.
Wilhelm, pick it up. Pick it up and drop it again. Mic drop. Kid, it was great to have you back.
I got to say one parting shot.
Can we have a little commitment, though, for these Fridays?
You know what? I'm a busy man. I'll do what I can to get here. I'll be here. What I would say is when the season starts.
Does not sound like a commitment.
When the season starts, I'll be here. I'd like to wish a happy Passover to all those out there and to the number one ranked Passover in America, the Jacobs family. They have about 52 people that pile into their house, and they do a legit
pass. Is Scott Epstein on that invite list?
Scott Epstein's on the list, but he was struck down by Stu Jacobs. Stu Jacobs said Scott Epstein does not take it seriously enough, so he's no longer invited.
That is a tough judgment of Epstein from afar.
Stu Jacobs is maybe the number one ranked Jew in town.
All right, folks, that will do it for us. Thanks to Brian Baldinger, and, of course, thanks to each and every one of you, and of Kevin AC, your boy from San Diego. Got to say thank you to Jason Gibbs, running a phenomenal show as always, even if we're second rate to him. Thanks you to the kid. Thanks to Matt Wilhelm. I am Nathan Zagura saying have a great weekend, everybody, and thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily.
On ESPN 850 WKNR.
Here we go, Brownies. Here we go.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.